Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Well, Don't Just Stand There. I'm Johan, as usual, and today we're going to talk about whether or not your Twitter social graph can make you more creative. The Department of Justice really flubbing an investigation into trade secrets. Stripe takes a swing at social payments and might have landed a home run. Apple products, and Android starting to roll out monthly security updates. All of that and more coming up. Let's get started. All right, let's start with something a little bit infuriating, but, you know, this is a buyer beware story of what happens when people get over-specialized and don't completely understand what they don't understand. The Department of Justice recently dropped all charges against Xi Shaoxing, the head of Temple University's physics department. He was arrested and charged with sending over schematics to China for what is supposedly some proprietary invention involved in chip manufacturing. Now, they accused him, arrested him, interrogated him, and proceeded to attempt to build a case against him. But months afterwards, they discovered that the schematic he was accused of sending over to the Chinese illegally was not of the thing that they had accused him of sending over. And when they looked at it, it was a schematic for something entirely different. Something that he had pretty much every right in the world to send over. It was not, as they said, this key component, which was illegal. And then they dropped all charges. Let him go. And sent him off into the world to, I don't know, pick up the pieces of having been accused of breaking federal laws, spying for China. Now, why do I bring this up? Mostly because we are living in a world that is increasingly becoming hypervigilant about intellectual property rights and trade secrets. And information is power. Information that is kept domestically, that is keeping domestic industry competitive, these are things that the government is now willing to prosecute in order to protect. But we have industries where what we are creating as intellectual property is becoming increasingly complex and difficult to understand. And when the Department of Justice can spend several months building a case against an innocent man, when they don't even know what schematics he sent overseas, you can start to put together a nightmare scenario where people are having their lives majorly interrupted or potentially ruined by accusations and investigations from people trying to protect intellectual property, trade secrets, and information about national security that they don't really understand. They know that you should not be sending things over to China because they are the boogeyman. We are negotiating treaties at the national stage, like the upcoming Trans-Pacific Partnership, where intellectual property and copyright are some of the key things that are being discussed. And incredibly strong legislation is being put in place to protect the owners and holders of the copyrights and the people with vested interests in maintaining these trade secrets. And a lot of resources are going to be brought to bear in the coming years on people who may be infringing on these copyrights, who may be sharing these trade secrets. And if they're having a hard time telling what it is that you're actually sharing and don't have the expertise to understand it, that could be a very scary future. But at least in this case, with testimony from the actual inventor of the device, which this man is accused of sharing schematics of, stepped forward and said, hey, these are not schematics of this device, which is called a pocket heater. That's not what he sent over, and I should know because I invented it. Pretty lucky that guy was there, and several other key witnesses and experts who could refute this and get this guy off the hook, but scary that they could get that far. Enough doom and gloom, let's talk a little bit about security and a positive development, although one that came about because of a very negative development. Monthly security updates have officially started rolling out for Android devices, for Google-made devices, for Samsung and LG-made devices. Now, the impetus for this new monthly rollout is an exploit called Stage Fright. And it's a scary one because it lets somebody with malicious intent pretty much hijack your device with code simply by delivering an MMS message to your phone. And they're able to execute code on your phone without too much issue. So all of these OEMs rush to get out a fix, and this is a severe enough exploit that the vulnerability of the Android platform has kind of been brought into a new, more unflattering light. And so now there's a push by the OEMs and by Google to get these updates out on a regular interval and try to prevent the millions upon millions upon millions of Android devices out there from being compromised. But there's a problem. There is a problem with monthly security updates or regular scheduled security updates of any kind in Android. And that is the same problem that is at the root of so many issues with Android and part of the reason why it is so extensible and popular. And that is, it is incredibly fragmented. Individual manufacturers produce their own skins on top of Android operating system updates. They design phones completely to their own specifications with different modifications to firmware, different modifications to the security features of these phones, and then they are all operating under different carriers. So every single combination of unique software on top of every single different version of Android OS on top of every single different carrier that also has to approve every single update that goes out over the airwaves to your phone, it's a massive bureaucracy that gets in the way of your phone getting timely updates. So the first monthly update arrived 36 days after monthly updates were announced. So they didn't even quite make it, even though there was an incredible fire under their ass to get these updates out the door. But now there is at least a drive and a push for it. And hopefully Google can wrangle together all of the different OEMs and carriers and create a more streamlined system to get these updates out the door and to prevent people from being caught with their software pants down. One can hope anyway. Quick aside here about something that I thought was pretty interesting. The MIT Sloan Management Review released a study talking about the effect of your social graph on Twitter on your individual creativity. So the people you are following and the connections between them can determine the quality of ideas that you come up with for work. So they tracked multiple people at a certain corporation and tracked the people who submitted new ideas. And then they went and they tracked the social graph of the people who were submitting ideas and compared them to the people who had no social presence at all. Not too much of a difference between those two groups, but within the group that had a social presence on Twitter, people who followed more unique accounts that did not have much connection in between each other, sort of a spoken wheel looking social graph with you at the center, as opposed to a web with you at the center, if you were to visualize it, and they have a great little visual that you should look up. If you have more disconnected accounts that are bringing you different ideas that you have not seen before. The quality of your ideas that you submit on your own will improve. And they saw a measurable increase in the quality of ideas submitted by the people who had these more disconnected, more challenging feeds that brought in new information that challenged preconceived notions and things of that sort. So I just thought that was really interesting. And it's neat that you can create an environment in your own social networks that can improve the ideas that you have and maybe even boost your creativity. So something to think about when you click follow on the next account that you want to follow. Is it going to make you smarter? Stripe, the payment processing startup, although at this point it's probably a pretty well-established business, has just announced a new service called Relay. And the aim of this is to be the backbone of social payments. Now, there's not a whole lot of information about the implementation for this yet, but they're releasing it with a couple different partners and on a couple different social networks, including Twitter. And basically what this service will do is act as sort of the middleman and an API for your product SKUs, for tracking specific transactions, and it will interface with whatever existing commerce setup that you have as a commerce company, and it will plug you into the purchasing interface on these e-commerce websites. And I think this is really clever. I think it's pretty forward-thinking. It's difficult to do payments on mobile. It's difficult to do commerce on mobile. One of the stats that they cite is that 60% of traffic to e-commerce sites is now mobile, but only 15% of purchases are happening in mobile. So there's this huge opportunity to optimize this experience. And every single social network and every single e-commerce site is going to try to tackle this differently. But what they're all going to need to do is find some kind of middle layer between their buy button and whatever solution the vendor is using to manage all of their inventory and all of their products. And Relay is going to sit right in the middle of that. And I think it's a really great play, and I think they're going to do really well, and I think we're going to hear about it over the next couple months and see exactly how well they're doing. Because at this point, they are outcome independent for each individual e-commerce solution. If the Twitter buy button and the Twitter buy interface that they design is a total flop, it doesn't really matter. They're the back end. They can plug into these many different services. And if Twitter comes back and tweaks it and relaunches it again, they'll just plug into that interface. Anyway, it's an interesting development, and it's something I'm going to be keeping a close eye on. And if it succeeds, you'll probably hear about it again on this podcast in the future. All right, I saved the richest for last. It's Apple time. So the first thing I want to talk about is the exciting announcement of the iPad Pro, aka the Microsoft Surface, with iOS on it. This is an interesting product to me for a couple of reasons, and not just because it's attempting to corner the productivity market, which naturally Microsoft is doing their very best to try to protect. But what stood out to me in the presentation talking about the iPad Pro during the Apple press event is that it's supposedly more powerful than 80% of laptops out there. Now, in the context of Apple devices, like, that's not really a crazy stat. They've been improving the power, energy efficiency, graphical capabilities of the iPad, the iPad mini, the iPhone, everything. It's very iterative, and it's all been improving at a good clip. It's getting harder and harder to tell the difference between each version because we're getting more optimized for this powerful software. But the reason I think that this figure is interesting is that Apple makes their own chipset. So powering the iPad Pro is the A9X ARM processor. It's not an Intel processor, and it's not a PowerPC processor like Apple used to run. So they've made several leaps in terms of the internal hardware that they have used to power their devices. And ARM chips, which are these mobile chips, have never been powerful enough to challenge the current Intel chips that they have in their laptops. But they manufacture this A9X chip and all of the mobile chipsets in the iPhone, in the iPad mini, in the Apple TV. They produce these. They have an in-house team of engineers that is optimizing these chips. And the fact that they are getting close to performance for over 80% of the laptop market means that they are getting very close to being able to produce potentially an Apple laptop that has this chip inside of it. And that would mean that they have pretty much cornered the entire supply chain. So they will produce the processor, they will produce the housing, the glass, the software that runs on it, everything. The graphics chip, the whole shebang. And this is super interesting because it cuts out one of their major partners, which is Intel, who probably relies very heavily on these chip purchases. So the iPad Pro could be a sort of Trojan horse. It's a kind of test bed. It's the most powerful mobile hardware that is not a laptop that Apple has produced to date. And they could be using this as a way to very steadily ease up the power of this chip. And then all of a sudden they have control of this entire supply chain, which Apple loves to do. They love to have complete control over their supply chain, and supply chain management is one of their great competitive advantages over a lot of other PC manufacturers, phone manufacturers, tablet manufacturers. They have strict dialed-in control and quality control, and they can dominate the market because of that. And maybe this is going to happen with the CPUs too. Now, the other new iPad mini and the new iPhone, you know, they're iterative improvements, and that's probably great for people who've been waiting in the wings to upgrade. But I think those are all pretty iterative at this point, and, you know, the 6S is by default the mid-level model. The iPhone 7 will be the one that supposedly blows you away. So if you're waiting for something exciting there, that's what to keep an eye out for. I'm certainly not that interested right now, but I'm an Android user. The Apple TV is getting an update, and I think that means that Apple has probably realized that creating a television is not really a great idea. A television is a dumb screen. It is a commodity. It is a race to the bottom, and people are probably not going to jump out to buy an Apple TV because they could go to any number of manufacturers to meet their needs, and they could just plug in a Roku box. They can plug in their Comcast cable box, their PlayStation, and now a brand new, updated Apple TV. And I think that's the right play. I think that is where they should be going. They should be working on their software. They should be working on apps. And they should be working on ways to improve the interaction between their iOS devices and their OS X devices, and find better ways to get that content up on your television screen, as opposed to building the screen itself. Which, to be honest, you probably don't care that much about, so long as it works. All right, that pretty much wraps up the podcast for today. I want to leave you with one last thing, an interesting Twitter account that you might want to follow. It's just called Census Americans. It's at Census Americans, and it tweets out exact accurate descriptions of people who have completed the U.S. Census. And it's a very interesting cross-section of America. An excerpt from the most recent one is just, I studied miscellaneous education. I got married in 1962. I have a bachelor's degree. I am married. I've never served in the military. And it just tweets out every couple of hours a new, interesting, very short, candid profile of a real person who has completed the census. And it kind of puts things in perspective if you're looking for something interesting to follow. Well, thanks for tuning in, for episode 6. We're halfway to a dozen, and I'm not sure what a dozen means, but we're halfway there. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Johann Benedict, or my website, johanncodes.com. Otherwise, I will see you guys next week. Look forward to seeing you then. Music provided under Creative Commons license by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.